Accession number 17618, Mr. Thomas Atkinson, Reel 7.
Mr. Atkinson, Reel 7. Do you recall the code name of the exercise that you were on, Mr. Atkinson?
Yeah, Harold. I think it was called. It was a division, a first divisional exercise, I think, that we'd done. I think we got to know that it was the 46th div at the time. Not sure, but I think we got to know on that exercise.
What happened to you after that?
Well, during the exercise, well, everyone in the battalion, including the MO, walked. Very few got rides. And I was one of the stretcher bearers and also the regimental chiropodist. And after each day, which was approximately 20 miles walk, there was quite a number of people that needed feet blisters done, whatnot, because a lot of them was marching that day, hadn't done any marching for a long, long time. Even their mo was marching, and he had blisters, and I had to tend to his feet. And I always remember when I first opened one of his blisters out, he said, "Well, should you do it as much as that?" I said, "You then, well, you ought to know." And I was doing the march the same as them, but then I was on about and now 2 hours tendon feet, so I thought I had a rough deal actually. And we slept rough, and we used to carry a stretcher bearer, me and another stretcher bearer, and we had blankets and things in. And the end of the day, when you thought you were going to have a lie down on the stretcher, you found one of the sergeants comes along, or the sergeant, I don't know which one it was, takes the stretcher off you, and he has it. We lie, you know, just in the roof somewhere, and probably put the gas cape down, you know, and for a little bit of protection, and that's how we slept the night.
Well, you must have been a pretty fit battalion, pretty fit group of men.
Oh, I think they were very, very fit, yes. We'd done a heck of a lot of training since the days of our joining up, and what I will say this is, all the time I was in the army, I never once did I have to report sick. And there was one time when I strained me, had some sort of hamstring trouble, and caused by jumping about, and I was on the company team, football team, and the company command, he says, "You'll have to play." I said, "I can't." He says, "What do you mean you can't?" I says, "I can't. I can hardly walk, never mind play." He said, "You've never reported sick, have you?" "No," I said, "I don't believe in it." Anyhow, that I got away with the not having to play in the football match. But I still had to do my route matches.
Were you part of a battle school at that time? There were lots of battle schools were coming in at that period of the war.
Well, I spent a lot of time in Winchelsea round about that time. We had a sort of advanced little hospital, the MI room, where we used to treat the sick, and there was room in the I think we had about 4 beds for anybody that needed to have a day or two in hospital, you know. And I didn't get involved in anything like that, no. I couldn't tell you.
What happened to you next?
Well, after the manoeuvres, we got back and we were in Winchelsea and doing our usual training, and then we got our leaves in between as well. Seemed to get a leave every 3 months, 12 weeks. And then I remember the rumour coming around that we were going to move, and it looked very much like at the time that we were going abroad, which it was. And we went up to Camberley. And from there I went on leave. I think got about 8 days leave. And come back.
That would be your embarkation?
No, during that it was embarkation leave, yes. And during that embarkation leave I got married. I had to get married by special licence because of the short period. And I always remember this George Graham, one of my best friends. He was best man at my wedding, and we had to come back on this particular day, and we gets on the Sunderland station and he wasn't there. He was missing. Get back to Camberley and inquired about George. Oh, he'd been granted an extra couple of days to get married. So he decided to get married after seeing me getting married. And there was no sign of him getting married when we were on leave.
Did you have to get, in those days, the permission of your commanding officer to get married? Did you have to ask if you could get married?
Don't think so. No. I shouldn't think so. If you wanted some extra leave, you'd have to, but I got married myself during the embarkation leave, and George must have rang the commanding officer and asked him if he could have an extra couple of days to get married.
When you got back preparing to go abroad, you'd probably have a busy time. You would do inoculations and this kind of thing coming into your work?
Everything was going on at that time, because I think we only had about a couple of days to get organised and in Camberley. And I remember we all lined up and must have been getting on for midnight, I should think, when we all lined up and we marched off to the station.
Had you any notion where you were going?
Well, I think we heard that there was the first army had invaded North Africa, and it was rumoured there was around about Algiers, Tunisia, or somewhere around that. We didn't know where Tunis was in relation to Algiers or anything. I didn't, anyhow. And we marched to the station, got on the train, and overnight, and the next thing we knew we was in Liverpool, aboard, and we were put on board Staffordshire? It could have been the Staffordshire, the boat we got on, and it was crowded. There's sleeping quarters. We're all bunks all over, and if you wanted to go to the toilet from them bunks, you had to crawl on your hands and knees for 50 or 60 yards to get to the toilet.
We down in the bowels of the ship?
Yeah.
Was it a large deck area with... What were you
sleeping quite on? A decent deck area, because it was a cruise ship, and we used to have exercise on decks, and we had boat drills, you know, and get to your station every so often to with your life jackets on and everything in case of emergency, and this used to happen. I think we were on board the ship for 8 or 10 days. And, I should say 2/3 of them were seasick the first couple of 2 or 3 days. Because I remember the first day we went down onto the for our breakfast or lunchtime. It was full compliments. That was the first day. And I think we saw white bread for the first time for quite a long time. It was white bread was served up, and the meals was magnificent to what we'd been used to. On the second and third day, they gradually got less and less coming down for lunch, and this is as they were falling to sickness, seasickness. And I must admit, I never once did I get seasick. And I fed very well, actually, because there was more food than what you needed with all these sick personnel, And used to walk around the ship, you know, and see them lying in every hole and corner. Either did look ill. It must have been a horrible feeling. It just they used to try and just hide anywhere out of the road for peace.
What date had you sailed from Liverpool?
I think it was Christmas Day. Yeah, Christmas Day. Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't have a Christmas celebration on the same day as you left.
No, I don't remember. I know it was a celebration in the fact that the food was a lot better than what we'd been getting. And just to see a bit of white bread after all the brown black stuff we'd had.
Did you have any duties yourself on board the ship?
Myself, no. I just fell in with the platoons, whatever they were, you know, what they do, and exercises and bit of exercise on board the ship and get together. And one of the things that amused me was everybody on that ship lost equipment. Everybody. Bit of this missing, bit of that there. And I remember the officer coming around and he said, "Now listen, you all had full equipment when you got on board, and I don't suppose it's fallen overboard, so it must be in here somewhere. Some of you might have two of things, and another one have none." He said, so he had us all on the big dining room, which I think was the dining room, and all the tables and that had been moved. He says, "Now, what I want you to do is to bring all the spare kit that's not yours and dump it in the middle of the floor." He said, "Nothing will be said, just dump it in the middle of the floor." He says, "Because you've all got it somewhere." So this did happen, and there was a whole pile of equipment on the middle of the floor, you know. Now he went round, he said, "Who's short of a gas mask? You can pick one up." And that's how it was distributed. And at the end, everybody was fully equipped. It was rather amusing. But that happened probably a day before we sailed into Algiers.
What were you sleeping on?
Our hammock. We all had hammocks, yes.
Did you manage them all right?
They were all right, excepting that, if you wanted to go out to the toilet, the washrooms, you had to creep underneath the hammocks, go on your hands and knees. There was very little space.
You said it was extremely crowded.
Yes, I thought it was crowded, yes. Yeah.
So was it pretty hot and smelly down decks?
Well, the thing that hit me as far as smells was concerned was the diesel. I think the ship was, past its best days, and there was quite a heavy smell of diesel. I think, in fact, I blamed the diesel smell for all the seasicknesses that went on. I've got a feeling that was more to blame than the motions of the ship.
Was there a canteen on the boat?
I don't really remember. I suppose there was some sort of naffy canteen. I can't remember that.
How did you fill in your day? You say you didn't have any duties to do. You were doing some exercising and boat drills, but for the rest of the time?
Well, we more or less stuck to a routine of, lining up and getting counted and a little bit of exercise and a break off and then starting again. We kept pretty occupied, and we had talks from the MO, and I always remember a funny part of the MO's talks he got on about VD, you know. He had us all there together, and he said, "I want anybody to stand up, ask a question, and I'll answer it." And somebody got him and says, "Sir, is it possible to get VD off a lavatory seat?" He says, "Well," he said, "it is possible, but it's a funny place to be having intercourse."
Were you being told about the people that you were going to be moving amongst, the natives of the country that you're going to, native population, their ways?
Well, I think they did mention the fact that there was certain areas which was out of bounds, where you couldn't go into. Forget what they call these places, but they were out of bounds. And it was a marvellous sight, really, when the ship was approaching Algiers. And all the buildings was lovely and white, and sun was shining on them. It looked very picturesque. But it was a different matter when you got off the ship and you started walking. We were told, I think, but a 5 or 6 mile walk to where we were going to. And whether the officers lost the way or they'd misread the map, but it turned out to be never-ending, that march. And it was quite warm. I think we marched about 15 miles eventually, about 3 times longer than what we were intended to do. And we did eventually, was it Mason Carey, a little village of, I suppose, about 10 to 15 miles from Algiers. And we were in an orange grove.
Had you been issued with KD?
No, we'd never been issued with any KD.
You were in your khaki,
at that time, no.
Because it was late in the year, or early in the year.
It was December, wasn't it? I hadn't been issued with any kit up to that.
What were your impressions of Africa?
My impressions of Africa? Well, there was a lot of excitement going on. The very fact that I wonder where we knew we were in Algiers, and I think we got to know that the front line was 200 or 300 miles up the road along the coast to Tunisia. And I always remember when we were in this orange grove, one of the lads got a parcel from home. Was it in there? And he opened it up and he had about 4 oranges in there. And we were in Orange Grove. And I thought, well, his wife and family had saved them on just because they must have been pretty scarce back home. But he opened it up and 4 oranges. Of course, she didn't know where the parcel was going to. Could have been Iceland, couldn't it?
Had you any talks or lectures on the enemy that you were about to meet?
We had talks, but I don't think we had a lot of information. That seemed to strike me as that we weren't well informed about what was what. But we did know that we were eventually going to get on a train and go these 200 or 300 miles up to Tunisia, which we did do. And that's when we went up to Sejanian. And the front line was probably about 4 or 5 miles from Sejanian towards the coast.
What kind of date would this be?
What kind of date would that be? I would say that it was December, January, mid-January sometime. Mid-January went up there. And B Company, I was attached to B Company, and we were in this, it looked to be forward positions where we were. And I know there was these hills on both sides. I think one was called Baldy and the other one, Green Hill, was it? And we didn't know at the time that the German Jerry was on these hills. We seemed to be in the sort of, in the middle of them. And we used to come up from Sejanian, and we used to collect the rations, the combo boxes, and the truck used to, pickup truck used to come up the road about 3 miles from where our front line was, and we used to have to carry these combo boxes at night. That'd be at night because I think we were overlooked during the day. Carry these combo boxes into the forward positions where we were. And there was very little activity going on. There was a little bit of mortars or shells of some sort coming over. But my first experience of that was when we were out more or less. I was wrestling with this chap, you know, having a bit of fun. And then this mortar come over and it hit him, pieced it him. And I had to have a look at it, and he had a huge hole in his kidneys, one in his back, And he was dead within seconds, you know. Didn't seem long. We tried to put a field dressing on him, but he was dead. And everybody else had scattered into dugout holes. And we were in a sort of shepherd's hut.
This was your first casualty?
First casualty, yes.
First one, in effect, a real casualty. How what was your reaction? You have a real wound as against a practice situation.
Well, I mean, I remember as a stretcher bearer, and probably one of the other stretcher bearers just looked at this, call him Johnny Fox. And we looked at him and done what we could for him, which was a hopeless position. And that night, 2 or 3 hours after, we got the order to withdraw into Sedgen Inn. And we, the whole company of us, went back into Sedgen Inn. And then, as it got dark, I and one of the other stretcher bearers got on this pickup truck, and they took us back in the dark to go and collect the body. And it was quite heavy work, actually, because, as I say, it was over rough country, and the truck was about probably two or three miles away, and we had to carry this casualty back onto the truck, took him back into Sedgen Inn, and then we had to dig a grave and bury him.
And that became part of your duty as well. You would also not only bring out the dead, you would bury the graves.
Yes.
When you dug a grave in that situation, was that purely temporary?
It appeared to be a bit of a cemetery, but it wasn't a proper cemetery, I shouldn't think. I remember when we was burying and digging the grave and burying this Johnny Fox, we had area. It was quite a number of areas. Remember the areas coming up, you know, planes coming over and strapping the place.
Was there a service of any kind over the body? Did you have time for that?
No, I don't remember any service at all. In fact, I don't remember the MO pronouncing them dead. We seemed to be the only ones that was with them. That was the first casualty, and it was rather a shock to all of us, really, you know, I mean, friends. And as I say, I was wrestling this chap when this motor bomb went up, and couldn't believe it.
You can't hear. You couldn't hear that bomb coming.
No, I can't say. We were hearing bombs coming occasionally. There were very few and far between, and we just used to ignore them, really, you know. But when this happened, there was a right run for the dugouts. I remember we were in this, must have been an Arabot, where we were sleeping, you know. Yeah, this was the more or less the big company HQ. And the things I remember there was the great big coloured rats that used to come around the place. And used to, some of them put candles, when they went to sleep, put a candle, lit candle by the head to keep off any thing, these rats away from you, you know. And then they used to get amusement during the time of, they used to put some biscuits from the roof suspended by a string in the middle of the floor, and we used to watch the rats crawl up the side of the dunes and go along the top and then dive at the basket of hardtack biscuits. And they'd do that several times and they tore a hole in them, and then they would all congregate in the middle of the hut eating the biscuits. And we used to bang at them with our bayonets. And there were stripy rats, all coloured rats, big ones, little ones.
Were you sleeping on the floor?
Yeah, yes. I don't remember any palliasses at the time.
And you said the Germans held the high ground?
I didn't realise at the time that they held these high grounds to the right and left, but evidently they did when we went into that first battle. We did that morning. There seemed to be a lot of crossfire, and that's where, and we were walking into front scene.
They were on both flanks.
They were on both flanks. And I didn't quite understand it, why they didn't. All our training was that you always reconnoitred your flanks before you went forward, you know. But something went wrong with that attack, I don't know.
Were they very steep, the hills that we're talking about?
Oh, these were quite big hills, yeah. Yeah.
Was it a very hilly or mountainous area that you were in?
Well, it was flanked by several of these hills, you know, and I wouldn't say there was too much incline as we went into the battle zones, which, you know, where the Germans were dug in. But I didn't realise at the time that we were going to get crossfire as well. There seemed to be a lot of crossfire coming from these hills, and they were several hundred yards away, left to the right and the left. In fact, I don't think they were in rifle fire, but probably mortar and artillery that up there.
Well, that basically was what you met for the first few weeks that you were there, shelling and mortaring.
But yeah, just a little bit of shelling and mortaring and keeping your head down as much as you could during daylight. And I always remember there was a railway run right through. And you never crossed that railway during the day. You only could cross the bridge. You used to cross the bridge at night to bring in supplies and things.
Where was battalion headquarters in relation to the rest of the companies?
Round about Sedgenham.
Was this where they were in the tunnel of the railway?
No, the tunnel of the railway. I always remember that after the first attack and we withdrew back the next night, we spent hours and hours piling combo boxes into this tunnel. And it would seem to go on for hours. A couple of nights after, the jury had taken a lot. We'd withdrawn and all that work of carrying the combo boxes had been wasted. A compo box consisted of 14 men's ration for 14 days, of cigarettes and fruit, jam, hard biscuits. Anyhow, the way they used to work it out was seven blokes at one parcel. Was it seven blokes at one parcel to last them a week and you shared out? And I always remember there was 50 cigarettes in the a tin. And they used to work out at seven each. And I often wonder what happened to the odd one.
Was hot food coming up to you whilst you were in these initial positions? Obviously it could only come up during the night because of the shelling in the morning.
Yeah, well, we were getting hot food. I don't know whether we were doing it on the premises or what. I can't remember now, but you didn't eat your potatoes cold, and there was tins of potatoes and things like that. And I think there was some tins of bacon. A lot of fatty bacon, but it was tasty. And we used to get that heated up.
Was water supplies okay?
Yes, not short of water, no. They must have brought that up third night as well. Don't remember much about the water, but we weren't short of water.
Pinned down in that way, you can't move freely during the day, only at night. Was this a problem for green troops, in for the first time?
Well, I'd say we didn't pay a lot of attention to this being pinned down, because we wouldn't have been mucking around like as we did when Johnny Fox got killed. So after that, I suppose you learnt the lesson that you were being exposed and looked at and watched. But nobody told us at the time that we'd been overlooked as much as what we were.